I bring to your kind notice that Lord Krishna is the head of our samstha. You call it the mission, you call it the institute, it does not matter much. For all that is there in spiritual life, he is the head. The purposes for the descent of the avatar are entirely different from the purposes for the descent of the special personality. There is also some confusion in some minds people, in the minds of some people, that the emergence that is talked of is a total emergence, a point that requires clarification. I must also inform you that Krishnashtami was being celebrated and continued to be celebrated by Master as late as even 1981 when I was with him. That it was not a formal function is a fact after 1968 or 69. Peculiar reasons were given, namely that people may identify Krishna with Hindu religion and that we need not get into this controversy. This is in spite of the fact that the ISKCON has been able to propagate the Krishna consciousness in its own way, according to its directions. The main point to note is, it is something that is international and has nothing to do with any religion. Krishna himself transcended the religious barriers. If you kindly think over from his childhood, if you see Govardhanagiri itself, the phenomenon of lifting the Govardhanagiri itself is an action against the ritual that is to be performed to Indra or Varuna for rain. And he said that it is better to worship these mountains which have the trees and in turn give the rain. Some sort of a scientific approach long, long back he has taken. And he said that we need not bother about these functionaries, this very long back. It does not mean that he was trying to throw away all religion on that day. I am not here to argue that he all that. But I only try to tell you that he was not for it. So, if you look at it from an entirely different angle, you will find that even the principle of pranahuti, Babuji says, was something that was practiced by Lord Krishna. And afterwards, somehow, the theory of love has taken over and bhakti has taken over, and we'll have occasion to talk about that later on here, how this bubbling up or the boils that are there or the coloration that is there, all these things that are coupled with these ideas. Because most of us here also, we say that we got into a state of absorption, this deep absorptions or enjoyments or etc. things, these words we are using. Instead of thinking about the grace of the Master or the love of the Master in having given us the benefit of his company, we talk about ourselves. The type of thing is always there. So, we are here to think about our Master and Master alone. We do not even for a moment bother about Lord Krishna in the sense of having an access to him or giving more importance to him as a superior being. For us, the Master is all. This, I think, will be remembered by all of us here, and you will try to be in the thought of the Master in whom Krishna is expressing himself as on date. All the powers of Lord Krishna is vested with him, and perhaps something more if you had written, if you had read this Towards Infinity properly, and if you really gone through the stage, you will then understand that not only the power of Sudarshana Chakra is there, but something more also is there, with which we have nothing to do. All powers, we have nothing to do with it at all. We are here to be submissive all the time. We will have occasion to talk about the Gita around 3 p.m. I request all of you to kindly go through the article on Gita by Babaji Maharaj, which is published in Silence Speaks. Those of you who had opportunity or have access to the volume 2, volume 3 of part 2 of Babaji's autobiography, published by Brother Prakash, son of Babaji Maharaj, I request you to go through the pages from, I think, around 140 to 150 or something like that. But the months I can tell you, it is middle or end of March to middle of April, that is of 1946. There you will find the seeds for this article of Gita and how he had communion with Lord Krishna at that time, who says several things to him. So that we can discuss this matter also sometime later and share our thoughts. And if there is any need for clarification, I think we can mutually share the clarifications. I appeal to you again to kindly remember the sloka of Bhagavad Gita which we have given in our Patrika, which is published quarterly. Machitta madgata pranaha bodhayanti parasparam. The idea behind it is that we shall all share the thought of the Master again and again, so that our faith gets confirmed. More than anything else, I will stop this talk now with only one sentence, that we are trying to remember our roots. Call it home, call it Master, call it Lord Krishna, call it whatever you like, but that is the root. The root has to be known. And Lord Krishna definitely was one who was meant for it. And you will find that the special personality, that is our Babaji Maharaj himself, shares this from Lord Krishna to a large extent. And why I say large extent, Raghava will clarify later. But for the purposes now, for all our purposes, for practical purposes, we have no reason to think about Lord Krishna in exclusion to that of our Master Babaji Maharaj. Don't try to commit this mistake. This mistake can be very bad, because if you try to distinguish between them, it was his greatness and his kindness to my revered father in having told that I am ashamed that I have got to bring this to your notice, when he tried to differentiate, because he belonged to the earlier generation. Fortunately, we do not belong to that generation, and we don't get confused with Golakas, etc., things that are described elsewhere. I think you should spend your time mostly reading the literature of the Master with reference to this and other things also. In Silence Speaks, Brother Krishna here has put this article immediately after that. You will find on Viveka. It's an excellent contribution from Krishna Garu to this work. Because we try to arrange things according to a particular order in our books, not according to the dates, etc., things, but according to the subject of consideration. I also am thinking, it is for you to reply now itself, whether at least on this day, because even on Babaji's birthday or Lalaji's birthday, in the afternoons we do not generally meditate. The two times meditation given to us by Master was an abridgment of the three meditations that are required according to Sandhya. Those of you who read the commandment number 1 of Babaji Maharaj, the commentary, will understand that there are three timings for that. And the afternoon he says it's impossible for the modern person to do that, therefore I am abridging it like this. Now that we have found some time to gather and to share our thoughts, I think we may have a satsang around 12 noon, so that we also take advantage of the timing and then see the glory of the Master who is now shining bright over the sky.
It's around 700. Some add a few more, maybe another 7 or 8, some delete some. How many of us are aware that this Gita is not some sort of a running commentary? It was not a running commentary. This forms part of Bhishma Parva. At the end of Bhishma Parva, you will come across this particular song. After 10 days of war, when Bhishma falls, does not die, falls, Sanjaya comes back to Dhritarashtra and narrates. So it's after 10 days of war this whole thing is narrated. And the incident is before the war. So he saw for 10 days what was happening. He came and told, this is what is happening. The number of slokas given for Dhritarashtra and Sanjaya, Dhritarashtra puts some questions and Sanjaya answers. There are around 110 or 120. So you have to minus that from the total number. Why I am telling all this is, Babaji talks about the duration taken for giving this. And the counter argument you will find from some other person is this. So it is not 700 and odd, but 700 plus 1 minus 120. And it is not an exact narration as things were happening there, but they were narrated afterwards. All this is not going to make the point of Babaji less important. I am only trying to tell you what is the arguments that can be advanced. Insisting that they were told in so many slokas. It is not only Arjuna who asked Lord Krishna to take the chariot inside. Afterwards, Dharmaraja, accompanied by all his brothers, goes and offers his pranams to all the great people on the other side, uncles, relatives, gurus. One more thing that we should remember is, one side Drona is fighting and the other side his son is the commander-in-chief. Drupada is the commander-in-chief for the Pandavas. So Dharma Sankata was not only for Arjuna but more for the father Drona and his son Drupada. But they were not sensitive enough to put any question to God. perhaps they had the answer by birth. I am a bit satiric, I am using a bit of satire there, but that is what it is. They think they know. If you had at any point of time recited or read the Gita, how much time does it take? If you put this question, it normally takes around 1 hour and 15 minutes for a person who reads it. And the time taken to speak is much less than the time taken to write down. When you read or recite, the time taken is more. So if you take allowance for all these things, finally it will boil down to half an hour. That is the argument given generally. So it is not impossible to deliver this discourse. If we are going to argue only based on poetry or the slokas, then I think we may have to hear the other side also. But the most significant aspect to be noted is that nobody can gain Brahma Vidya by reading the slokas. Nobody can come to the condition of attending to his duty without any attachment, or with a due attachment to dharma, just by hearing the slokas. Just as we have been hearing for quite a long time many of these slokas, many of the stories, not only of Lord Krishna but of Babuji, of Lalaji, of every person, but nothing has promoted us to act in the way in which we were asked to. This, I think, is a matter of sadhana for all of us. We have been reading Babuji, we have also heard, and now we have made some attempts to give some talk of Babuji in some CDs and tapes, and people have been hearing. But how many of the people got the conditions that Babuji was talking in his book or in his tapes? If you put this question, it has not, one will come to his own conclusion, which I think he knows. I don't have to tell what it is. It doesn't make any sense to say that. So the question is that Arjuna could not have been prompted to act in the way in which he did if those conditions were not infused in him. And that surely cannot be done by giving the slokas. And this is one of the points that Babuji makes when he says that several people have sung but not a single person has understood what it is. This is the most important point that you should catch in that message, which says that people have been singing, but what use is it? How many of the people have become that? They could not become that because that particular thing was not done. Had the particular transmitted power was not there. I do not know whether you appreciated the point when he starts with first paragraph. He says that things have become so very colored nowadays. This coloring is not today. It has started from the very beginning. Our individual identities, Babuji makes a reference to this in one of the talks that has been recorded and is available, that we have no form of our own. Originally we never had any form when we were in a balanced condition, nor a name, but we got all these things later due to passage of time, as he puts it. It's a very, very eloquent statement presented in the most appropriate etiquette. Without accusing us of anything else, he simply says, that is what it is. So that condition, which we never maintained, for whatever is the reason. The ego is the beginning of all these coverings. 11 rings of egoism is what we go through before you enter into the Pindadesh. So in the higher realm itself, 11 sheets are there. 11 various types of egoism are there. And they are the colorings. We have various hues. Once we get that, then you get into a state of what we may consider. Try to see such colors elsewhere also. So, while everybody sings in praise of God, the song is remembered, the tune is remembered, God is forgotten. The casuality in singing is that we remember the tala, raga, etc. things, and also the words. But in the process we miss the essence. Because of its being sensory in its knowledge. Senses take over. And they dictate terms as to how we should experience. And such a thing has happened even for Gita, that's what he says. Even for the song of God, the same thing has happened. And that has led to various commentaries given on the subject. Now, why commentaries were written is a question. Not because they wanted to write commentaries. If any person were to propound a new system, they have to somehow or other integrate the meaning of the Upanishads, then the Vedanta Sutras, and also the Bhagavad Gita. If the common philosophy is not built keeping in view the statements given here, it will not be accepted as something that is right. These are called the Prasthana Traya. So people have commented on all these three. Some of them commented consistently, some of them did not comment consistently. For the first time, commentaries on Gita have come without reference to this, the need of integrating it with the advent of the spiritual renaissance that we had last century, followed by the political freedom movement. Tilak wrote his commentary, Aurobindo wrote his commentary, also Mahatma Gandhi wrote. These are the three very important persons who have written the commentaries on Bhagavad Gita without bothering about integrating it with either the Upanishads or the Vedanta Sutras for the first time there. Babaji goes further in this process and then doesn't even give a commentary on Gita but only tells us what is the crux of the matter. If you had at any point of time read essays on the Gita of Aurobindo or that of Gandhi or Tagore, you'll really be feeling the amount of understanding they had about the whole subject and how their movements were dictated by the meanings they generated from the Bhagavad Gita itself. They are all inspirational. Significantly, Babaji doesn't refer to all these three because he must have been aware of it, but he doesn't refer. He must have thought they were serving a different purpose than that of establishing the importance of the Bhagavad Gita, and each man has worked out his own theory out of it. He must have, this is my guess, because there is no mention at all about this. philosophical perfections that several Matacharyas have been able to establish through the Gita is not a matter for importance for us, for a yogi. For a person who constructs a system, it becomes necessary. For a person who practices the path of spirituality, it makes no sense at all. We do not gain any inspiration spiritually from that. We get intellectual clarifications on many points. This is followed by a person, the commentary of Radhakrishnan after the independence. I would not like to comment on his motives for that, but I can tell you that it's a thoroughgoing work that he has done as a student of philosophy. But if you try to seek any spiritual inspiration from that, I am sorry, you will not find it. He tries to expound it from several angles. Good work, intellectual work. But all are agreed on this point, that there was a Dharma Sankata. In this connection, yesterday, a few days back, I was reading a small book. It seems there was an indoor Maharani called Ahalya, who is not literate. So he asked somebody, some Purohit, to come and read for her the Bhagavad Gita. And he starts reading Dharma Kshetre, Kuru Kshetre, and she says, stop it, no need for reading further. He was confused, because he was a scholar himself, he was confused, what makes you say this? The message of Krishna is understood in this, he said. What is it that you understood, madam? I understand this sentence to mean, in Sanskrit this is permissible, Kshetre Kshetre Dharmam Kuru is the meaning of this. That is, in every field of action, do your duty. That is the meaning of this whole of Gita. I don't have to read the remaining portion. Illiterate she was, I think she was more illumined than others. The spiritual aspiration of the person was met there without going through the commentaries. Why I am saying it is, so long as you retain your viveka and thinking capacity, you will be in a position to understand the real meaning of it. But if that is given up, because it is here that we fall most of the time. We tend to be attracted by presentations, extraneous, which appeal to our senses in so many ways. They are all religious. It's a beautiful icon of Lord Krishna, we say. Perhaps after a few years you will say it's a beautiful icon of Babaji Maharaj. I understand one of it has already come, so the remaining things should follow. It's a matter of time. But before that, we have gone to the two-dimensional presentation of the master, and yes, some of us would say that this photo is more beautiful. That would have been a better sentence. But you say Babaji is more beautiful here. That's the worst sentence. So the way of looking at it also, if you are appreciating the photographic capacity, it's a different issue. But if you try to put Babaji there and then go on saying that this is Babaji, the most beautiful way of presenting him, I think you are getting into these colorings. Babaji uses a very interesting phrase for this. Why you call it interesting is, it is that which attracts you most. And for people who cannot see or cannot appreciate like me the difference in colors, I think the sound appeals. If the sound does not appeal, the taste appeals through prasad. So this prasad is much beautiful, more tasty, it's more, some sort of a thing comes. Or some scent, anything can be there. So this particular desire to stick on to the lowest level is the basic reason why our sadhana does not proceed. Turn that book. Long book. To move from the lower portion of the heart to the upper portion of the heart, we have tended to philosophize it because there is no other way of explaining. By saying that from self-orientedness to other-orientedness is what we were talking about. Basically, it does not make any sense. If you are looking at it from a practical angle, it does not make any sense. You kindly give me some few minutes, I'll try to locate the place. I can easily locate, no problem. In the course of yogic practice, you generally aim at freeing yourself from the bondages in your being by means of various practices. When you are free from these inner bondages and coverings, you begin to feel something higher existing in yourself. This is the indication for his later statement in Efficacy of Raj Yoga, where he talks about the lower and the upper. You have to move from this to the other. So he is talking about the inner coverings that we have got. What are the coverings that we have got? We had occasion to talk about it several times. It means that you are loosening the tie. It seems that you are feeling as jumping into the higher state for yourself. By and by, you have taken to universal that state to some extent, which is called hamahangi. The point here to note is, we have to free ourselves from these inner bondages, which are all colored. None of them have got an existence of their own. We have given them the importance beyond a limit. So this can be achieved only by a continuous process of receiving transmissions several times. And unless this is done, the proper attachment or detachment will not come. What disables us from having proper attachment or proper detachment to things is the inner coverings. In this case, he says, Arjuna says, I am now faced with the problem of dharma sankata, dharma samoda cheta. And what does he do? He says, sadhimam tvam prapannam. I seek your refuge. You alone can sort out this problem. And the answer to this is what you find in the last of the, one of the last of the shlokas of Bhagavad Gita. Sarvadharman parityajya mamekam saranam vraja. It's a really ridiculous statement in the sense. In the beginning he says, I have already fallen at your feet. Sadhimam tvam prapannam, I have taken refuge. And at the end of the Lord says, you take refuge in me. So what is it that has gone in all these 18 chapters? If you look at it, you will find that just as you and I are sitting here saying that, oh Master, we have surrendered unto thee, from this state of consciousness to the state of consciousness when you say, I am now accepted by thee and I accept whatever you say. Intermediary stages are various doubts that we have got, clarifications that we require. All of them are the products of our coverings. All of them. There is no exception to any one of them. All our doubts are due to this. 5 coverings we have got. We will not be in a position to start the journey unless you start with the prayer, Sadhi Mam Tvam Prapannam. And you end the prayer, the statement that I have now surrendered unto thee. That is what is summed up in our prayer, the only God and power to bring me up to that stage. That is the beginner, and that is the prayer for the person who has realized. There is no difference between these two. The prayer is the same. It takes care of all the people in this world at all stages of development. That it has been followed by Babaji Maharaj in his own lifetime, you will understand when he says that whatever I got is due to the grace of my master and there is nothing that I have got on my own. This prayer is not only told to us, but is also something that he has asked us to practice, and he himself practiced it and shown, whatever may be his state, he said that it is due to the grace of his master he has got. This helps you to come out of this cloak of gurudom that seems to get thrust on every person who knows a few slokas, or perhaps who talks about Bitta Vedanta. Not to speak of people who say that they are practice spirituality. All these people are gurus of various kinds. You will, unless we understand the Saranatva, you really don't understand anything of spirituality. It is the beginning and the end of it. So the 6 slokas that are supposed to have been referred to by the master refer to the 6 knots, and they should not be confused with anything else. What Lord Krishna did was, he was able to activate the 5 knots of the Pindades so that sufficient release is had by him, and he was in a state of really surrendering and not just crowing surrender. We all crow surrender. But he was able to come to that state. And why it is not beyond 6, and why is it not something that is ultimate? You may ask the question, because Advaitins will definitely ask this question. Bhagavad Gita will give you the ultimate knowledge. Babaji says, no, it will give you only this. And he explains it saying that while he had entry into the Virat, he was given the full scheme of things of the Brahmand, and he was not able to swallow the condition, and therefore he says, please kindly withdraw. He gives a very significant explanation for the statement of Arjuna, because you and I seem to be aspiring for that condition which he was granted, namely that of the real state of the master. And the man who had it, he said, please withdraw. Others who never had it seemed to be seeking after that, but then the man who had it said, please withdraw, I am not capable at all. Why is it in that state? Babaji gives a very, very significant interpretation when he says, you know, he has got entry only up to Virat, whereas the scheme of things at the entire Brahmand was given to him. And then he was not able to swallow that, was not able to accept it. His condition was not such as to understand that particular state. And so it shows that he has not gone beyond anywhere near this state. So to say that it gives you the ultimate knowledge, etc., things does not mean anything. They were all philosophical constructs. in order to establish the importance of the system of either Advaita or Vishtadvaita or Dvaita, they have given. Veda, Veda, several empty number of systems are there, each person has given. One more thing that has happened due to this coloration is the misfortune of the Chaitanya cult. They have taken to more of music, more of bhajan, more of recitation, incantation of mantras, more of rituals, because these are all sensory products. You can have a Rathayatra, must be going on today or tomorrow it will go. You have got several Rathayatras, one more Rathayatra will be there. There is nothing wrong about it. Only thing is, I am now waiting for the day when Ankalamas and Mahankalamas will also have the Rathayatra. The day will come. We will have soon. Because the way in which we are going is so very odd, and that goes in the name of bhakti, nobody can do anything about it. It's a natural thing. He said, it will follow, it should follow. And our aspiration here is to talk about the spirituality proper and not fall prey to this color, colorless. This is the basic point. Three things Babaji stresses most while explaining the Gita is that you do not have kartritva bhavana, that is, you are not the doer under any circumstance. This is a very, very significant point that we should understand, and you will appreciate it only when you come to the minimum state of consciousness, of developed consciousness of the Atma Swarupa Jnana. Viveka and Vairagya will lead you to this condition. So it is paramount that you should come to this. Until you come to that state, Babaji says, you accept me as the person who does everything, and he gives so many suggestions, saying that please think that I am the person who is going to the office, I am the person who is brushing your teeth. Several things he gives. And he says it may be just for in the beginning only mimicry, but still do it. It will do you good. We have been hearing it. I would leave it to you people to decide whether you have been following it or not. While eating, you think that it's master who is eating. While you are discharging your duty in the office, think that it is master who is doing. While coming, it is he who is coming. You go to a cinema, think that it is master who is seeing the cinema. Second time you will not go. First time if you think like that, second time you will not. But then since we will not go second time, we refuse to think the first time itself. So this is a peculiar logic which we apply for ourselves, and that is the hold of the sensory things. Sensory and sensual things hold so much. So this doership is something of an illusion. It is not correct. And what is the advantage spiritually, if you see this? It enables you not to form further samskaras. When you don't own an action, then it does not form a samskara. And accumulation of samskaras, if you can stop, half the journey is over. That's what Babaji has said in some other context. This, I think, is what we should learn from the fundamentals of Bhagavad Gita. And he says, it is not you who is fighting, I am the person to do it. And when do you really get established in this state? Not when you are in Rad 2, but when you really cross Virat, and when you know that everything is planned already, and is a divine dictate that happens. Now, this leads us to the question which is unanswered in the Babaji's words, namely, are we condemned to such a fatality? Is fate something that will govern you to that extent, that ultimately everything is what he has planned for? The fact is, while it appears that it is so, but that is so only when an avatar comes for his purposes. So far as the avatar descends, that is what he has planned already for the solution of the Indian raise problem on that day. Similarly, today the plan is, whether we like it or not, that we will be coming out of this competitive world, we will be coming out of this aggressive world, and we move into a world where there is cooperation and coexistence. And we will be in a principle of sharing and sacrifice will be the governing principles of life. Solid materialism, governed by the civilizations backed on magnetism and electricity. Civilizations, not magnetism and electricity, they will continue to be there. But the importance given to that will come down. And there will be a balance that is struck. The most important thing that you and I should understand here is, while Arjuna was the only person to whom this particular vision was shown and he was not able to swallow, he has made explicit the vision now and he says, this is my vision. Vision is a very peculiar word. People have interpreted to mean, vision means some sort of an idea, some sort of a dream, some sort of a picture that somebody is presenting to us. No. Vision is something, this is what I see as the future. Some sort of a principle that is given to us to understand. He makes in the chapter of vision very few predictions. Very few. Some of them have come true, the remaining will come true. The main point to note is, that is vision 2020, as my chief minister puts it. So that is the concept of vision here. That is my perspective, that's what I plan for. This is what I am planning for, and I want you all to cooperate with me in achieving this. That is his call. If we surrender to him totally and think that you are not the person to have that vision, but so you are only implementing it, I think then you follow that. So it is not as though each one of our life's action is dictated by the divine, in the sense of it is something that is coming from above. But what is to be noted is that your own samskaras will be governing to a large extent, and you are accumulating your samskaras. So stop your accumulation of samskaras, so that I will take care of the remaining things. He also gives another vision here. You are not condemned to fate of those things, but you can form a fate of your own. Namely, by attaching yourself to me, you will be forming a fate of your own. To some extent, this life in the microcosm will affect the macrocosm also. It is true, the macrocosmic vision descends. But it's also true in this case that the microcosmic vision, microcosmic existence, will be in a position to influence the above. Not that it influences to the adverse, it influences to the positive. That is, we will be in a position to strengthen the hands, if at all it is required, such a phrase is required, or participate in the program of the divine. So this is the crux actually of the doership concept that he talks about. Why should we feel that it is a master who does it? Because you will be strengthening his hands thereby. It's a matter of participating in a divine function, not only for your advantage, it has got its own advantage at the higher level. The second thing that he talks about is the Nishkama Karma, about which several books have been written in so many ways. Several people have interpreted it. Some extremes of there, particularly you will find in the Mayavadic Advaita, saying that action itself can be abandoned and sannyasa can be taken. That type of interpretation will not work. We have to do our duty. What is the duty that is there? That which is governed by social laws. The social laws on that day were different from the social laws today. whatever may be the social law, there are four things that govern all action, any society if you want to structure it. There must be some people to plan, some people to execute. This is a must. Some people to supervise. If you understand the caste structure from this basis, you will be in a position to understand it is mostly a class division and not caste division. And the plan, the vision of master is, as you can see in the reality of down first chapter itself, that eradication of caste is the first thing that nature has taken up. It is happening. It will happen. There is no point in our resisting any one of them. If you resist it, then you will suffer. If you accept it, you participate. That is how we shall understand the whole vision. So this Nishkama Karma is one that what is the karma that you have got to do, and that has to be in accordance with your dharma. The dharma in that case of Bhagavad Gita was one of that a warrior who had to fight, and he says, I will not fight. He was not prepared to do his duty, and he had to be told that you better do your duty without attachment. If you don't do, I'll anyway get it done, because this is a plan that's already laid out by me, and if one partha is not there, I'll find somebody else who can do that job. That's what he was just plain talking was there, and the plain talk is there for us also. Babaji says, things will anyway change. If you participate, I'll be happy. If you don't participate, anyway I will get things done. The call is very, very clear. You should understand that. Our duty is to participate, not to discuss about whether it is possible to lead a life of cooperation and coexistence. Is it any sensible to lead a life of sacrifice in a world like this? Is it possible also for us to serve without any motive? Incidentally, I should say a small thing. No remarks on anybody, just a make statement. I read recently some article in which the claims of Mother Teresa as a person oriented to service is questioned. They say it is motivated with the missionary zeal and specifically oriented to the beggars of Calcutta. There is a depiction of the entire country of India as one of beggars, attempt made, and then that has to be saved, salvaged. This being the motive, it is devilish in pattern, and therefore she does not deserve the saintliness that is sought to be conferred on her. Why I am saying this is, most of these external services can get into this particular argument. When you try to do some good to others, there's always the question, why this fellow is doing it for me? There must be some motive behind it. Without motive, how is it this fellow is helping us? Now, without hitting at any one of your conscience, I must tell you, this seems to be governing our thinking in very many ways. That the institute has been publishing books and also meeting with a certain amount of loss in the matter is known only to some people. Majority of the people think, if these fellows don't have anything already, why is it they are spending it and how is it they are spending it? As I told you, you have to excuse me if I have hurt, but my point is clear. Our thinking is so very clouded that we think always in these lines. And it is clouded mainly because of our attachment to either Dhaneshana or Samadharishana that is there. The country which has talked about sacrifice as a way of life for a grihastha today has come to a condition that sacrifice is a difficult word to find in a grihastha life. The fourth god is the Atiri. And I don't think the first god himself is not welcome. Where is the fourth god? The fourth god does not. This is the unfortunate state to which we have descended. And one has to understand that this life is a product of sacrifice of the divine. That is the essence of the Veda itself. The Purusha Medha has happened and therefore this existence here. If God has not sacrificed himself, there would be no existence at all. So the principle of life itself, the principle of existence itself is based on sacrifice. And we do not seem to fall in line with it. This is one country we have fell in line with that particular thing. But I think thanks to the colored view of things that have been presented to us by our brothers and sisters elsewhere, made our vision also blurred. If it is not due to glaucoma, it must be at least due to cataract that most of us are suffering. Something like that. There's a pressure in our eyes, that's what I mean. Glaucoma, you are told, is a pressure in the eye. And these pressures are Dishanatrayas. That's what makes you really confused. And now this is the Ishanatraya that was in question in the Mahabharata. Attachment to my people, kith and kin. It is attachment to kith and kin, that is a problem there. Undue attachment is not what is wanted. And that is the first state that we are asked to develop in sadhana, and that is the state of consciousness that we get around the knot 1 and 2 itself, provided we do the sadhana properly. So this state had to be brought into him. So why is it we are not able to do the karma that is given to us without a desire for action? If you look at that question, what makes us not to do, perform our duty just for duty's sake? It is because of our attachment to these things. If I do that, this will harm my man, or harm my interest in some way. Nishkama karma becomes an impossibility mainly because of that, not because of anything else. So if you want to come out of that, naturally it's the preliminary stage that we have got to cross over. This attachment must be crossed over. So however much we go on arguing about the Nishkama karma, it is not possible to have it. We can go on telling the importance of objective work without any subjectivity, without any self-interest. There is no difficulty in talking about it. But how to have it? Unless that particular condition is with us. And so you must know that ultimately Arjuna takes up to arms and then he fights. That means he has made a decision to do Nishkama. This is the crux of the whole issue of Bhagavad Gita. Understand, Krishna is making us to understand that you have to not own up the doership but work with due attachment to everything. And what is the due attachment? The attachment is always to dharma. That which maintains the universe is more important than our personal attachments.
So it is the dharma that becomes superior. And the dharma today, as I told you, is to participate with the divine for working for the transformation. The dharma that we are talking about, individual clans, castes, etc., things about which many people go on arguing, is no dharma at all. Where society has evolved considerably and nothing will happen now if somebody is not going to do this or that. Somebody else will take over. It will still be done. The thinking process will go on, the planning process will go on. Maintenance jobs will be done. Anybody who is in maintenance is considered as the lowest of the level. Anybody who plans is supposed to be highest. And today we have also refused to accept that difference. And equality of pay structures and difference in wages, we don't accept more than 10 times or 5 times or 15 times, I don't know, whatever is the rationality behind it. Something is governing all of us. Things have changed considerably on that aspect. The social order will continue. Will continue to function. Nothing will happen to society because of that. But everything will go haywire if we don't understand this. And it is already reaching that state. A selfish, motivated activity is a present day bane. You have to come out of that. So he gives you a picture of what are the thing, what is the type of things that is likely to come, emerge. And he says, you participate with me. I enable you to do that. The transmission that was given to Arjuna alone would have impelled him to do his duty. It is very obvious if you look at it from this angle, and that is what Babaji talks about in his essay, the Gita. It's a much more profound commentary than the commentaries given earlier. They were trying to get inspiration from a few sentences this way or that way. Most of them were poetic. And none of them wrong. If you take them independently, none of them is wrong. So a state of surrender has to be developed, and this develops only by the grace of God. And grace of God comes to you only when you seek it. Unless you say, Sadimam Tvam Prapannam, you don't get that abhaya in the end. So the seeking is our job, giving is his job. But in the process, that the transmission technique that he has brought in here, which was something that very few people enjoyed those days, and he made it available to all, is another new thing that has come. It is changing the order in a different way. The urge of the center or the divinity to transform all of us, to make this creation of his more beautiful, because he is naturally interested in keeping it beautiful and not make it more and more dirty. That is the motive of the divine now, to help us in the whole process. And the principle of pranahuti is the most essential thing that we should understand, and these are the states of consciousness that every one of us is entitled to have and we are assured to have. It is for us to work up for that. That is the article there. This is followed, as I told you, by in our book on the stages of realization, which of course is not our topic of consideration. But anyway, it is not something that Arjuna had. That is more than proved, even according to tradition, because he never went to Brahmapadam. He was a victim of his Mahaprasthan, the third fellow to fall. So nothing great about him. That is, in spite of the transmission that he had from the master on that day, and in spite of the clarity that he has developed to perform his duty, he could not move further. This is one point that we should understand more and more in the context of Sri Ramchandraji. Because the assurance talked about here is that a non-return, Simply because a man goes to Swarga doesn't mean that he will not come back. He will come back. Arjuna must have been born several times afterwards. So did Yudhishthira. He should have. What they were is not of any interest for us. Maybe he is one of us here. We do not know. We really don't know who he is. We don't have to make idle search. What was promised in the Bhagavad Gita is not any state of realization. It was meant for a specific purpose of making you understand that you have to discharge your duty without attachment. And due attachment is what is emphasized. That is the crux of the whole of Gita. And in order to make you understand that, he also must have told you a bit of Atmajnana. Make you understand that you are dependent upon God. Don't worry about people who die, because death is going to be happening, which has happened to you several times. It has happened to me also several times, he says it. Only thing is, I know what has happened to me, you fellow do not know what has happened to you. That is the sloka. There, the God says that he was born earlier several times. And you can go on writing stories on that, saying that this is a Nara and that is a Narayana, and then go on writing. There's nothing prevents you from writing all that, reading all that. Interesting to read, interesting to remember, but not interesting to practice. They're good. Instead of reading something else, you can read this. My point here is that we should know that the states of consciousness relating to the Brahman or the Virat that was given, and not that of the ultimate. The ultimate is something that has been already stated in the Upanishads and the Vedas as something that is not something that you can describe. It is neti, neti, neti. So it is not a vision. The ultimate doesn't grant you a vision of the type that Arjuna had. If you know a bit of tradition also, you know that very clearly. It is not the ultimate that was shown to him. We do get visions of the Master. We are also granted that certain times if we are blessed and if we are really attached to him in the real sense of the term, then I think you are also blessed. As one who had such a type of vision, I can say, yes, we are also blessed. But that is not the ultimate. This much of clarity also was coming along with it, that though this is my state of consciousness of performance, the real state is something that is behind, far, far, far behind. That is neti. And what is it? What is it like? If you ask the question, what is it like? Then it is like the 1,000th part of, 100th part of the width of the hair. That is how it is described, and that is how it is experienced also. What is not a matter of my experience personally is that I don't know that to be a pulpy substance about which Babuji writes. But the remaining things, yes. But how long still? Still the journey is on. Does it end there? It is towards infinity. We move, because there is no limit for this humility or humbleness that we have got to develop. We start with surrender. We start with surrender. Our surrender is accepted. We move on and on. And there's no end to this. As he says, the first person who has got into that region is still swimming after so many lakhs of years. The reason for that is, till the Mahapralaya happens, that the atmosphere person cannot merge. Till that time, the identity is maintained. I don't know whether Raghava was explaining to you this concept of mergence itself, because it's a very, very complicated concept from a very mundane angle. So we try to put one triangle over the other triangle and then say they are identically equal to. This identically equal to will not work. It is the consciousness that we share, and the extent to which you can share this consciousness of the being or the center is something that because that is null. There's no end to null. There's no end to void. You have to move on. So it's always certain identity is left. Certain amount of identity is left, which if it gets grasped becomes individuality. A very, very intellectual way of looking at it is that. But real experience is that it's very difficult to know what exactly happens to you. I can tell you, in the first stage of our sadhana, we get all sorts of thoughts banging around our head. Very, very confusing, disconnected, all sorts of thoughts are there. That is the beginning stage. When you lose your consciousness of identity, of individuality, what happens is you are forced to reckon with the umpteen number of thoughts with which you have no connection at all. They are all individual existences. Each one has got his own individuality and identity of its own. And there is a very bizarre condition, which really is something that one has to cross again, but then is never crossed. Imagine the identities and in the central region, so many are floating around. Each one of them is not capable of being aware of the other for the only reason he has lost his capacity to see. His only point of concentration is the center or the base towards which he is moving. But he is constantly aware of the impact of other people. People who are either parallel to him or opposite to him, who are behind him, every one of them will be affecting. It's a matter of experience. I will not be in a position to explain more than this. But that is the extent to which we can move towards null. Even in a state of null, this position is still there. Because several people have moved on there. It would not be only your good self who will be moving there. But several good selves have gone there. Each one getting attached to the center has moved there. The most grasses level, you will ask, what is that, what is this, who is the next person by your side? The misfortune is, no such attention is there. There is an interesting remark by Babaji Maharaj about my father's condition, when he compared him to that of Atri Maharishi. You will find in those letters. Your condition is like that of that person. And people who know a bit of tradition know Atri is the most revered among the saints. And he is given the task of maintaining the seasons, the world order. So far as seasons are concerned, it is under his control. Babaji is on the card elsewhere about this. So when he says that you are like Atri, he is only referring to the participation in such a similar divine function entrusted to him, and the line will be in accordance with that. So the humility is taught, simultaneously the work is entrusted by suggestion. A person who develops viveka understands it. A person who does not understand viveka will go on talking whether Atri is supposed to be living still in Himalayas. Supposed to be. And what happens to him if this person is that? One person asked me this. A sadhaka asked me this question. I said, I have no answer. You meditate, you will get the answer. Though I knew the answer, I was not prepared to tell that. Because one, the place in which such a question was asked is not something that was sublime. because people seem to ask all questions at all places, and the decorum, the amount of reverence that we have got for great saints will not permit us to talk about these things everywhere. This may get reflected as a statement that so and so person is arrogant, he does not answer me. Right? That also is possible. We must be prepared for that. Because we cannot afford to offend higher-ups for the sake of satisfying the interest of some people, which is mostly based on curiosity and not on sadhana. Then there are some others who will confuse this with the Atri and the Dattatreya conditions, and then they go on talking about it. One person talked to me also. He said, I don't know anything about it because my master did not teach me that. I don't know anything. About this Atri, I know that he is in charge of this. So I make now and then jokes saying that Atri must be sleeping when the seasons don't come in time. So we miss stations, you know, if God sleeps, we miss stations and perhaps also get into some accidents. We don't know what happens. Now and then we can definitely make jokes at our masters. That much of intimacy we have without any blasphemy. Why I am saying it is, at the higher conditions you really don't know who is who, but you are told certain times to fall in line with somebody else. And you should have that thinking. That is the purpose of such statements of the master. Now that he is not audible to us in the sensory terms, one has to develop the capacity to hear without words. And that is the beginning of the language of feeling. If the language of feeling is understood, you really grow in spirituality. Otherwise, rest is so. That's all. Whatever we are, we are. What is there to talk about? The states of realization that Babaji talks about are far, far higher than this. And one need not get confused. For the simple reason, he explains to you, these are the three things that are there and this is the purpose of that. And he explains this. Now the order that was supposed to be maintained after restoration of such order by Lord Krishna, the dharma that has been established by him, should normally be maintained for many more years to come. But somehow, some inertia has developed somewhere. If you want to understand this, you should understand the theory of parallelism of Babaji Maharaj. The line of divinity moves on. The line of humanity also is there along with it. And this is definitely influenced by the line of divinity. But for which there would not be this much of progress is what Babaji makes it. This parallel thing which was there, line of humanity has taken several curvatures, not maintaining its parallelism with the divine. The parallel lines got twisted and umpteen number of waves have come in there. And the divinity is not able to accept such unparalleled things here. It wants the human mind, the human existence, to go parallelly with it. The creation must go in tune with divinity. The line of humanity is nothing but the line of creation. The line of divinity is nothing except the essence. Since the essence itself cannot exhibit, it comes out through the line of humanity, creation. And creations cannot go counterproductive to the purposes of the divine. And when it develops certain aberrations as it has already developed, it needs to be restored. It is not simple atheism that is being questioned. There is nothing wrong in atheism. It is trying to develop a certain amount of possessiveness of nature itself, natural resources itself, that is running contrary to the purpose of the divine. What is supposed to be something that is shared by all, if it is to be cornered by a few, whoever they may be, definitely it is not in consonance with the divine. So the principle of sharing has to come back. The principle of sacrifice, which is the basis of the manifestation itself, or the basis of the parallel line itself. The parallel line comes into existence because of that sacrifice. If there is no such sacrifice, there is no parallel line. So that gets affected and that has to be restored. The parallelism must be restored. The amount of curvature that has developed is such that there was a need for bringing in another force. To satisfy that norm alone, our Grand Master Lalaji Maharaj has structured a person in such a way that he exhibits the center itself. Just as the Purusha was capable of bringing in this creation, you require another personality here to rectify that situation, and that personality should be almost of the same nature as God Himself. That is why Babaji says, I bring in Sat at the base. The base is now in action. Because it is a base that has created and it is a base that can rectify. Lesser than that will not be in a position to. Avatars come from the field of Mahamaya, that is the powers of God. Powers of God will not be in a position to maintain this order today, and the essence of God has to come. So in a sense you will find the special personality who is working, he is more than the avatar and at the same time he is subordinate to the avatar. The avatar has come according to a scheme of things already set in, and he has restored it on that day and has gone back to work from the higher plane. But the vehicle got into troubles. It was not moving well. So influx from a higher level than that had to come, but still subservient to the order of the present day avatar is required. Such is possible only and only when a person becomes void. If the special personality were to maintain certain amount of identity, certain amount of awareness of his own existence, he will not be in a position to put this bill. That is what exactly is the wonder that has happened. And here we find a special personality in action. Is it going to be a permanent feature? Is a question, and that has to be answered as no. It has to be only an interference for a period of some time. You call it a millennia, you call it more, you call it less, it does not matter much. The person who has to work, the personality has to work to rectify the things. And he says, I have done most of the work now, it's all completed it, and I have done things which will be enough for another 1,000 years. Rectification processes. So on all, that is the time gap that is required to rectify the whole thing. please note the stupidity of the task. It is not for our individual realization that you find a special personality. The individual realization is an integral part of the social transformation that is required. The other has to be established, and the individual realization will happen. Unless you realize, you will not be in a position to perform like that. So the obsession with individual realization, as some of the Vedantins would argue, will not give the result. It will not. As a matter of fact, that is one of the most sensuous desires of intellectual people. Most sensuous. Because when realization is not a state of awareness of the divinity, but is one of losing your identity, nobody will seek that. So, in a sense, if you look at it, the statement of Bhagavan saying that Sraigunya Vishayaha Vedaha Nisraigunya Bhavarjuna, he was talking about the five Pindadesh points, and you have to go beyond that. Why is it? Vedas were confined only to these five. They were not capable of going beyond that. So unless you go to your consciousness above this, you will not be in a position to appreciate the functioning of the divinity itself. Functioning of the functionaries that are there, you can easily understand. The five elements, you can definitely understand. But beyond that, you cannot. I had occasion earlier to mention how the Ravana Brahma himself was an authority on the Vedas and is the basic exponent of Samaveda itself, supposed to be the most dearest to the Lord. Vedana Samavedoham is what the Bhagavad Gita talks. He doesn't talk about the Rig Veda, etc. things. Samaveda is supposed to be the superlative of the Vedas. And you know, the originator of that is the Ravana, Pulastya Brahma's grandson. Yes. But you have to go beyond that. You will yield only when you go to the higher plane. And this Babaji has made it possible today. He says, now I'll make you possible to live at the higher plane. Yield to me. Leave your jealousies, leave your animosities, try to start sharing, service, sacrifice. Is this what he is talking about? So if you look at it from this angle, entirely different angle, ours is, this system is an extension of the principle of Lord Krishna. Why I am talking about principle of Lord Krishna is, it's not a person that is there. It's a Krishna consciousness, as rightly called. But then the Ramchandra consciousness supersedes that, at least temporarily, to rectify things here so that the purposes of the divine are served. And when I say this, I do not mean to say that we are either trying to circumscribe the operational ambit of either of these personalities. We dare not. This is what we understand. And if we maintain that humility and proceed, then I think we understand more of the system. So the stages of progress that we are talking about is not a state of absorption that we seem to be having now and then. That is only an intimation that the divinity is with us. It's an intimation that he is with you. And some people always tell me, sir, yesterday it was more deep, today it is not. This is again a sensuous orientation to your sadhana itself, and you would like to evaluate it. If you keep the view that you have to become null, I don't think you will make this statement. Such a clarity in sadhana itself is a must. The goal clarity is a must. And goal can be understood as one of participating in the divine function, which you cannot do unless you also simultaneously realize. Simultaneously. Not one after the other. Through service we progress, through progress we serve. They are interrelated. You will be in a position to perform without any motive, only when you don't have motives. So long as you have motives, how will you work without motives? So the responsibility that we have got to
of the divine. Well, trustee is understood in very, very mundane terms very, very well. This trust that has been given to us, and in spite of the fact that he tells us, please note that you are my trustee, we don't seem to live up to his expectations of being a trustee. We are the persons to whose care he has given so many. Important, less important, does not matter much. He has given. We are, each one of us is a trustee. But then a trustee is one in whom he trusts, is it not? But then the betrayal seems to be more often the truth than maintaining the trust. For the first time he used such a big word, and that is the anticipation. If you don't fill up that aspiration of the divine, of behaving as a trustee, then the vision of the divine itself gets affected. And he refuses to yield there. If you don't accept, well, find some alternative. If nothing happens, okay, I'll end up the whole thing. That is the importance of understanding the special personality along with the role of Lord Krishna. And as I told this morning, our attention shall always be on our master. And how much we can make ourselves a good trustee, a person through whom we can function. A trustee is one who accepts the philosophies of the person who gives this, or the aspirations of the person who trusts. That means we have to live in the consciousness of Sri Ramachandra in order to be a trustee, otherwise you will not. If we are slaves of our habits, our thinking patterns, and refuse to change them, in spite of the influx of the divine, we would be the losers. We will not be in a position to perform the task given to us. And this is one of the main reasons why people drop out of sadhana immediately after some time, or they don't take interest in doing sadhana, even though they accept that there are abhyasis, and certain times also take higher responsibilities than that. There are lapses in sadhana in people who are supposed to teach sadhana to others. It's a very ridiculous situation, and most unenviable fate of the master is that. But this has to be rectified. My appeal to you is only that much. It has to be rectified. There's no point in finding fault with others. Perhaps the faults are more with me than with you. But what I would strive to point out is, we have to rectify. We cannot afford to waste or squander the little span of time every one of us is given, and during which the onerous responsibility of behaving as a trustee to the master has been given to us. If social transformation has to come, it has to come from every one of us. All of a sudden, one blue moon, one good day, you are going to find the whole of humanity transformed. It is more a cinematic illusion than a possible reality. Such was the expectation or anticipations of great people. Let us say, you have got one standing example recently, is that of Meher Baba. He said, I will break my silence on such and such auspicious day and the whole world will be realized. The misfortune would have it, even before the day dawns, divinity thought of calling him back and he was no more. This is all bragging. It doesn't do any good. Similarly, Sri Aurobindo talked about an advent of the divine and he said, once I am bringing down the supramental consciousness here, every person will automatically get enlightened and a new race will be ushered in. Maybe it has found some super consciousness, has found some place somewhere, I do not know. But surely we have not become any better after 1951 when he left. The task of bringing it was given to the mother, who also became a victim of the Kala Purusha. None of us are going to stay here beyond the time fixed. The clock is there ticking all the time. And however much we try to wind it back, you cannot do that. The clock moves on. Every second wasted in other than the divine is a criminal waste. It's a crime. I don't have the guts to call it sin, but it's a crime. And definitely it's a mistrust. We are given a trust, we have got to keep the trust. The pledge is sacred. And the sacredness of the pledge must be maintained. That's why when the supramental consciousness concept was posed to Babaji Maharaj, he says, he talks about supramental, it is not going to change anything in this world. We require this, the base itself has to come. And it has already come. It is attending to its duty. He was in a way referring to himself. He was in a way referring to us, saying that you please have the confidence and proceed further. So it is not Krishna consciousness, it is not the Aurobindo supramental consciousness that is going to help us. And he has hinted at it when he said that Krishna used the Sudarshana, I am using much above, the Kala Chakra is being used. While he maintains the etiquette of saying Lord Krishna is my Lord, he also simultaneously says that I am using the Kala Chakra. In this you have to find a real meaning. Are they two in one in two, or two and one? These are all intellectual questions. It's a matter of your experience to know that both can be had, both can be worshipped. The elders must be respected and there is no alternative to that. We must understand the role of the avatar, there is no alternative to it. We must also appreciate the fact that we are born at a time when we are being governed by a special personality. It may not be the fortune of many people. After about considerable time, 1,000 years is a very big time from our point of view, but from the point of view of nature, it is no time. So we should take advantage of this and live in his consciousness as far as possible and live up to the expectations without in any way neglecting any one of our duties to the society or to the family or to life. So this is how I would like to interpret, and personally that is how I have integrated both this in my life. It's of some value to you, please take it. Otherwise think over and then find your own solution. You will get it. So long as you trust the Master, so long as you proceed, each man is taught in his own way. I have been taught in this way. So I share it with you. I can only plead with you that this is the way to do.